You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, where we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer, and I specialise in food and science. This podcast is all about attracting future talent from the industry perspective. Now, people working across the industry around the globe are rightly recognised as some of the hidden heroes in the battle against COVID-19. And at the same time, the connections between health, nutrition and diet are rarely out of the media spotlight, with public health voices joining industry, providing advice on nutrition. But there's a skills shortage looming. Why is this? This podcast will be the second in our series of podcasts looking at the scale of the problem and how industry and academia can work closely together to fix it. We're joined by Helen McNair, Technical Director of Lionel Hitchin.
Hello.
Jacinta George, Managing Director, Reading Scientific Services.
Hello.
So, Helen, can I start with you? Now, we've heard that we'll need an extra 140,000 new recruits into the industry by 2024. You are slap bang there at the heart of the food industry. Does it feel like that? Are we scraping to drag people into the food industry?
In my business, we're in Hampshire, and in a fairly remote part of Hampshire. And yes, there are times when we can really struggle to get all sorts of people in our business for all sorts of areas, you know, from the production operatives to chemists in particular, and sensory experts. Flavorists are a very rare breed. My company's a flavors industry, and yeah, really, really tough. We've had to go abroad for some flavorists that we've recruited recently. So it can feel very difficult, particularly people sort of with a bit of experience. It does feel hard across all areas of manufacturing, yeah.
Okay, and Jacinta, what's your experience of this? I mean, is it just really difficult recruiting?
It would really have to be a mixed bag, because we take on folks from early career, so the apprenticeship level to interns, grads, right up to PhDs. And I think at one end, you're trying to make sure that you increase awareness at the early career stage. At the more elevated areas, like as Helen is saying, you're looking for some experts, and there's probably only a handful of them around the world, and so you need to recruit globally. So yes, it is quite variable, and then increasingly the caliber of people and what you're asking for, because the bar keeps rising, is getting higher.
So, Helen, what effect does this have when companies, and not just yours, but when companies have trouble recruiting new people? What does that mean on a global scale? Does it just mean that less food can be produced, or what? What are the actual practical ramifications of this?
It's not about less food being produced. I think it's about if you don't have the diversity of talent, you don't have the diversity of creativity and innovation and problem solving. And, you know, more and more we're finding, you know, all sorts of problems, from processing to solving, you know, some of the issues that you talked about earlier, you know, the obesity health. If you don't have the talent there, it's going to, you know, that the talent that we've currently got, who have been in, people who've been in the business like myself, you know, 30 plus years, eventually they're going to run out if we're not breeding that talent coming forward to be innovative, be creative, and do the problem solving, because you sort of lose that experience and that expertise.
Mm. So, Jacinta, why isn't the food industry a sexy place to work?
Oh, but it is.
Well, there you go. Tell us. Or why don't people think it's a sexier place to work?
Oh, I think, you know, you've made me reflect on this. And if I look back to where I started, like Helen, in flavors, how exciting to be able to understand what you have as a consumer, tasting and enjoying food, being able to understand the fundamental science of it. So I'm really at a loss sometimes to understand why it isn't more attractive. And I wonder if it is where someone shared with me that at an A-level perspective, the subjects that we need people to study in are perceived as the most difficult. It's chemistry followed by maths and then physics. And yet for me, chemistry was one of the most easy subjects of them all. It explains how the world works. And I think we just need to do something more to override that perception and help that it actually isn't that tough and that it has real life applications. So I think there's a job for us to do there.
Mm. And I think, Helen, that there is a, is it true that there's a perception that the food industry is not a positive place, that there are big food companies that do bad things? Do you think that's part of it, that people don't think it's an industry to be proud of being in? And I'm not saying whether it is or not, but is the perception that?
Possibly. I mean, I think there are a few very large global pet players who have had to suffer a lot of stick. Certainly in the past, you know, when we've had these massive food scares with the horse meat scandal, and then, you know, going back years, salmonella and eggs and Perrier issues, you know, they do give the industry a bad press. But, you know, when I look in our supermarkets and I see the incredible range of foods that we have, I think it's a great shame. And I think, you know, the food industry, particularly in the UK, has been working really hard to make sure that everything is going well. You know, if you think about the standards, I believe that the UK has led food safety standards for decades now, ahead of most other countries. And, you know, you think about the BRC food safety standard, you know, that has been written across the world now and is being used across the world. And I don't think the public give credit to our food industry in the UK, you know, right from the agricultural side, that there is a lot of negativity about it, which is a great shame because, you know, like Jacinta, I think it is such an exciting industry to be in because it is so diverse in terms of the food. You know, we're going through this awful COVID-19 crisis right now, and you can go into the supermarkets and I've been having discussions with people about what's essential food, and you sort of think, well, yes, we've got tens of thousands of lines in this supermarket. You could argue they're not essential, but the consumers have learned to enjoy them and expect them now, and so for those consumers they are essentials, and we need that diversity to not be putting then so much pressure on one or two big industries. So, you know, it is a really exciting time. There are masses of challenges that we need to solve, you know, the whole health, obesity, sustainability, environment. Food has such a massive impact on all of those things and feeding the world. It's a really exciting business to be in, and I'm not sure quite that the food industry deserves the negative perception that it might have. But I think it's getting better. I think some of the TV programs that you see inside the factory and those sorts of things, people are starting to understand where their food comes from. And I think that's possibly the issue as well. It's that people don't understand where food comes from. They don't understand how it's produced. They haven't been asking the questions, the right questions, so that, you know, it doesn't take much to breed the wrong perception of what the food industry is doing.
If I may just add on the subject of chemicals, and this goes back to the perception of the food industry, our bodies, our whole lives are made up of chemicals, and yet the word chemical is bandied around, and yet in a negative way, and yet it is those same chemicals and that chemical understanding that helps us better understand our foods. You know, for example, how many people knew about umami as a taste experience? How many people would have been able to have stevia on their tabletops instead of sugar had it not been for the likes of food companies understanding the chemical structure of our plants and being able to extract really valuable active ingredients from that? It's understanding of the chemicals that allows us to develop new products, like the whole vegan products, understanding the functionality of the different components of the food, and all food companies will have a very active food safety program. So whether it's allowing for detection of contaminants through cross-contamination, the world of allergens as we have today, or any food safety issue that happens, you can be sure that every company is already actively looking for those on a surveillance basis. And having invested a huge amount in technology to be able to be primed and ready for that, and that only comes about by having the right scientists with the right background and the training in order to be able to step into those need states at a moment's notice.
But we've got governments who are effectively anti-science, who don't like the idea of science in our food. You know, I absolutely agree. The idea that there's no chemicals in our food. Well, water is H2O. You know, everything we are chemicals. But that doesn't seem to resonate with people, does it? You know, and is that down to politicians and people saying, you know, we don't need experts? And you know, certainly the American political world is full of people who really don't like the idea of science at all.
Oh, I don't see that at all. In fact, I see our government bodies, through working with the research councils, the BBSRC, EPSRC, Innovate. They do a lot of work to collaborate and understand industry needs and help host joint industry initiatives with government funding and university experts in a way that it wouldn't otherwise happen if you didn't have the government acting as a catalyst. So it is absolutely happening in a very proactive way. And the food industry is better at stepping into that space, recognizing we can't do everything on our own. So I see it truly as a joined up approach.
Okay, well, that's really good to hear. Now, Helen, let's talk about your own career path. Can you tell us what drew you to the industry? Why was it the one for you? And how were your first steps in it?
Yeah, I was thinking on this. My career in the food industry started because I had a love of food when I was at school. I did home economics and I just loved cooking.
I loved home economics at school. It was so good.
Yeah, and I didn't know where it would take me. I was really passionate about food, and I didn't know where it would take me. All I could sort of think was hotel catering, and I just thought, well, I don't want to be doing that. And I can remember so clearly having a conversation with my mother, and I must have been about 15, 16, and I was thinking about what university courses I wanted to do, and I was telling Mum, you know, I want to work in food, but I don't want to be sort of hotel catering, chef-y sort of things. And Mum said to me, well, you know, think about a Mars bar. Other chocolate bars are available. But, you know, people have to develop those products like a Mars bar and you know, working out how to make it and put it together. And I had no concept at all about, you know, how food was made. And, you know, these were the days of Findus crispy pancakes and, you know, Viennetta and all of those sort of really innovative types of foods that were coming onto the market that were processed. And it was that conversation that spurred me to trying to find out about what courses were available. But my careers advisor had no idea. They didn't even know that there was food science, food technology courses. And, you know, and couldn't tell me what they were. So I had to find out a lot for myself. So that was really what sort of started me off. I went to Reading University and did a food science degree and then just sort of worked my way through different, different industries. I was in manufacturing. I've worked in the food service sector. I worked for retail. So I've been really lucky to have a very diverse career. And I never sort of imagined, certainly when I set out, that I would become a technical director. I didn't even know those sorts of things existed, but just sort of worked my way through. And as I said earlier, you know, the diversity of the food and drink industry is fascinating, and the sorts of jobs that you can go into within the food industry is just so huge.
What was your first job and what was your first day in the food industry?
I worked for a company called Eden Vale in the dairy industry. And I was working for, it was a company that they were making yogurts at the time, and they just put in a new machine to make a layered yogurt of fruit on the bottom and yogurt on the top, set yogurt on the top. And in those days, so this was in the mid 80s, you know, that was really innovative, that sort of layered yogurt. I mean, you see the time now, but they were one of the first businesses to be doing that. And I was sort of on the production line and I hadn't got a clue what I was doing. And yeah, because I sort of started off in production because I thought, well, I don't want to be in a lab. So even when I was going through university, I didn't really have very much of a concept of the sorts of jobs that my food science degree could take me to. And so I went into production because I thought, well, I don't want to be in a laboratory all my time. And it wasn't the best career choice for me, but I did that for a few months. And then somebody, I think, sort of saw that I was a bit more creative and suggested product development, possibly as sort of a bit of a softer side. So I went into product development and then moved to Sainsbury's and had 8 amazing years with Sainsbury's as a technical manager, working across all sorts of different sectors, and had the opportunity to go into probably hundreds of different food manufacturing sites across the world. So, you know, that was an amazing job and really learnt the breadth of the food industry.
I'd just like to, can you specify? So you've said the word amazing a couple of times. What was amazing? Is it the travel? Is it the knowledge that you consume? What's the bit? Is it the teams that you work with?
Yeah, I mean, teams.
Sell it to me.
Yeah, so, I mean, certainly in Sainsbury's, at the time, there were 150 technologists in Sainsbury's. So you were working amongst these incredibly talented colleagues from, again, all sorts of backgrounds and lots of knowledge. So you just learned from each other and fed off each other, which was great to do. That was really lovely to be amongst a lot of people who had the same passion and interests that you did. And then, you know, just going out to countries and going into vineyards, for example, and in Turkey, and seeing how sultanas are made, that you just would have no concept of how sultanas are made, how they're dried in the fields, they're soaked in can't remember the name of it, sulfur dioxide to sort of take the colour out of them. They're then handled, I mean, consumers may not like to hear this, but they are handled dozens of times, every single sultana, making sure that they don't have stalks in them or they don't have seeds in them. And they're on these enormous inspection belts, manually inspecting. And just to learn that is fascinating. And I felt incredibly privileged to be able to go to these countries and sort of see from the first point at the agricultural productions processing stage, chicks being hatched in Thailand, for example. And, you know, it's a privilege. It's a real privilege to see that. And everybody is always interested in food. There aren't many people who really don't care about food. And so you've always got something to talk about with people because they want to know, they're interested too, how their food and drinks are made.
Yeah, it's a common language. So, Jacinta, what about you? Can you tell us about your career trajectory? How did it start? Why were you drawn to it in the first place?
Right. Well, interesting. Up to Helen, I had a choice in school between home economics and science. And I thought, gosh, it has to be science. so really, from there, I went on, as I said before, found chemistry incredibly easy and wonderful in the way that it can help explain how the world around you works. And when I was at college and university, my colleagues were actually more in the petroleum industry and the pharmaceutical industry. And really, I come into the food industry as an outsider, really. I trained in analytical chemistry, later business. And really, it was that curiosity into how things work that was attractive for me. Specifically, I was interested in fragrances and perfumes, and actually flavors is not a million miles away. So when I saw a role that was a flavor chemist in Cadbury, it was the job for me. That was my first job.
That just sounds like a brilliant role. It's such a beautiful job title, isn't it?
Oh, it was the job to die for. It was the opportunity to understand the flavor composition of the chocolate, for example, and using techniques where you can identify every single chemical flavor component, put a name against it, better understand then, in fact, one of the techniques called mass spectrometry has an odor port to it. So you can sniff each of those components as they are being separated. And then as you look at the composite picture together, you make the chocolate accordingly and see if it marries up with your understanding from the science. And I think that's where then, if you take that into other food products, all the time you're looking to break them down, to better understand them. How can you make them taste better? How can you understand if there's any contamination there? And that's why I say there is a whole wealth of capability where you're bringing new products to the market, better tasting or better for you products, or understanding what good looks like. So when something is a contamination, you're already ahead of the game. So my career then took me into working in laboratories, funnily enough, in different countries, in Ireland and in Connecticut, in drinks. I led operations. I've joined on the commercial side. And I suppose that's a good example of whether you come into a sector with one technical expertise, it doesn't stop you from engaging as a total business leader. I was involved with marketing and business development. I ultimately led the commercial function. And, you know, when you're in those kind of settings, people do need the credible science. They need the facts. And that's the role that you can bring as a scientist into those decision-making situations. And then I moved to the Mondelez side of ingredient research and looking at well-being ingredients before moving into RSSL in 2017 to lead the contract research business, which is looking at laboratory testing, research, training and consultancy for food and healthcare companies.
And go on, give us a highlight. Give us one of the real highlights of your career so far. A moment where you thought, I can't believe I'm doing this.
The highlights would be where there's been a food safety issue, and you know that as food supply chains can be very long and complex, that you need the scientific intelligence to understand what is the chemical that is causing the issue, how much of it is there, how can we mitigate it, and how can we get production lines up and back running again and help keep the country running, keep the food supply chain running. And one of the focus areas that we've had was an emergency response service. So we were available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so as a team, we used to leap into action, sometimes working through the night. And there is an enormous sense of fulfillment when you know, I've made that happen. I've made a difference to the food industry. I've made a difference to my friends and family who can still continue to consume that product safely, and I know it's been done well. So that would probably be the highlight.
Sounds pretty good. Now, Helen, let's look at some of the work you do now. I believe you do some work in schools. Can you tell us about that? And what's the aim of doing it, and what's the impact?
Yeah, so I got involved when I was with my previous company, Twinings, ABF, Associated British Foods, with a charity organisation called Inspiring the Future. And the main reason we wanted to do that and get involved with that was because of the problem with future talent, and thinking we have to get involved with schools, we have to sort of get into schools to talk to children, particularly about the STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering and maths, to get them, you know, more open to having those qualifications, so that then hopefully some of those people would then come into the food industry. So Inspiring the Future basically link industry with schools, and the volunteers like myself go into the schools to do all sorts of support for getting people to understand about food industry in particular for us, but just all sorts of careers that are available for children. And so I mean, you know, they started at sort of with older children initially, and thinking about interview techniques and CV writing and just sort of talks about food industries or the industry. But then they realised actually you have to get primary school children thinking about potential careers and just literally inspiring them to think about what they might do in the future. So I've actually been into mainly primary schools to talk about the food industry and my job, and in particular sort of the flavours industry, to just get them excited about food. And it's quite challenging when you're talking to you know, children as young as 5 or 6.
yeah, that's ambitious, I have to say.
About, you know, the science of food.
Yeah.
So I talked about cola flavours and how cola flavours are made up. So I sort of took in some oranges and some lemons and limes and cinnamon and nutmeg and got them to smell all these spices that some of them hadn't even, you know, smelt at home in their cooking, or they sort of recognised them. And then just then put and getting them to understand how they all get put together to make a cola flavour. So, you know, it wasn't like talking to, you know, some older children where you might have been able to talk about the science. It was just really about getting them to think about food as a career and understand the diversities of the industry. And, you know, one of the concerns that people like the Inspiring the Future organisation have is that children start to put genders to careers as young as 6, you know, which is really scary, that people are, you know, young people are starting to think about what jobs they might do and thinking, well, I'm a girl, so therefore I can't do X, Y, and Z, or I'm a boy and I'm not going to be doing that sort of thing. So, you know, you have to get in there really, really young. So that's Inspiring the Future, and it's a great organisation. Actually, I'd recommend it to any business or individual to get involved with, because it's very satisfying, you know, seeing their faces sort of light up and get excited about cola flavours and just stuff that they drink every single day and have never really think about what actually is in it and where their food comes from.
Yeah, and it's a lovely application of science as well, to say, like, well, you eat this stuff, you know, there. And when we talk about acids, that's that taste and things like that. And so, Jacinta, now, RSSL are based at Reading University, and Helen was talking about Reading as well. Now, I do a lot of filmmaking, and we invariably end up at Reading to do something or other. And there are loads of other universities who do deal in food, but Reading's a real leader in the provision of higher education in food and nutrition. Now, is this important? You know, how important is the university and academic approach to food nutrition in terms of getting people into the industry?
Oh, critical, absolutely critical. As I mentioned earlier, it's that join up between the schools, the universities, industry, and the government. We all need to join up because it's one big circular progression. We need to have the right talent coming through, inspired so that they know what industry is going to need from them. The PhD programs that we referred to are often sponsored by the government, and so you need that funding and that awareness. So it joins up with government initiatives and what they're asking for from the food industry. So it is all very much interlinked.
And so what can you explain a little bit more about what you do in this area? I'm interested really in why you based at Reading.
Oh, it's for very historical reasons. We've been there over 30 years. Then at the time, Reading, as well as today, had a very strong reputation in food science, and that was where Cadbury Research looked to set up one of its sites.
And are you literally hoping to take students from the university into the industry by being there?
Yes, partly. We have a strong connection with Reading University. In fact, we are positioned right across from the food science and the chemistry buildings. So as part of our intern program, or we sponsor various different initiatives together, as well as other universities around the UK. So there are a number that are very, very strong in food science.
Now, you've both got some really fascinating stories about your careers in the industry. It seems like an exciting place to be. This doesn't seem to be getting through to students. What needs to be done? Do we need a tele program? Do we need a change in thinking? Do we need the government to be more involved? What are the low hanging fruit? What can we utilize to change this?
We need to start when children are curious and wanting to trial different experiments, because many of us came into chemistry because of the magic and the excitement of chemistry. So I think there's a piece where we need to outreach into schools in a more proactive way. And we've got some videos at the moment that we do, or the Royal Society of Chemistry has some. There's other educational institutes like the Institute of Food Science and Technology. Now, almost the flip side of that is there is so much information out there, it needs almost to be brought together in a more coherent way. And so there is a program underway to pull all of that together and really see genuinely what the gap is. Then I think we don't have so many role models, but there's great chefs there, for example, in the industry that we see on television all the time. But at a very local level, schools have got more of the programs with the Enterprise Advisor Networks, which is bringing in people from the industry who can then go and advise children in schools and help give them real life examples, as well as help us in industry better understand what school challenges are as well. So just tightening up that linkage. And then I think also, especially given the current environment where we're now a lot more virtually orientated, there's a lot of great initiatives like speed networking, virtual career fairs. Again, there's a whole host of information. It's, as I said, just trying to consolidate it into one place. But someone like the Institute of Food Science and Technology is extremely well placed to do this.
And the FDF does a fair amount of work in this area as well, doesn't it?
Very active as the largest trade body, yes. And recognizing that the food and drink industry, as you said at the beginning, is the largest manufacturer in this country. So we do need lots of great talented people.
Helen, what would you add? Would you add anything else to that? Other ways of fixing this problem?
Yeah, I agree with Jacinta. I think we have to get into schools and we have to get into universities as well to get people to understand what jobs are available. I did a talk at Oxford University, and my colleagues have done it the first, subsequent year, and to the Chemistry Society. So it was, you know, the sort of out of the academia side, but it was in Oxford. It was a Chemistry Society, so it was sort of one of the evening talks, and we were talking about flavours, and again, people hadn't, you know, even Oxford graduates, undergraduates hadn't really thought about flavouring and food industry as a job for them, as a career prospect. And I think it's helping people to understand where their academic studies can take them. They don't have to go into more academia or the more obvious sort of career paths that chemistry, for example, might take them. And it's the same with things like law. You know, the food regulations are very complex and we need people who understand food regulations, and that can be a job that's really hard to recruit for, regulatory experts. But you know, if you're doing a law degree, who on earth would ever think about going into a food manufacturing company? You know, you wouldn't. So we need to be getting out into universities and colleges, as well as the schools. We need to be right through the whole education system, really. And the government do need to support the Food and Drink Federation and people like that to do that, because I think the government are realising, particularly in these recent days, that food is fundamental to our country's security.
Yeah.
And you know, it's the biggest food manufacturer or the biggest manufacturing sector, as you said. So there's a lot of people that we need to have in the industry. So the government has to play a role in making sure that people understand about the food industry.
Okay, now I think we just close this off by giving you both a platform. You have a group of sixth form students in front of you. What would you say to them to want them to jump into the food industry? Would it be a specific moment, like when you got your first job doing a specific thing? Would it be the moment in looking at sultanas in the field, or is it something a little bit more conceptual and broader? Jacinta, maybe you could start off. So you've got a group of snotty sixth form students there, not really interested in the rest of the world. What are you going to say to inspire them?
Lovely question. Right, I guess if I had a group of sixth formers, which would be my pleasure, I would say to them to look at the food around you and how much you enjoy your food, how much you're watching trends, and maybe you're liking vegan foods or a new flavor. Where do you think those come from? Would you like to work in those areas? And instead of your colleagues, when you take the next photograph of your food and share it with your friends, you could be like a connoisseur of fine wines and say, I know about these foods. This is the chemistry behind them. And you could wow your friends. the people that I work with, they describe themselves as being like geniuses in our corridors. So if you want to work in a place that is dynamic, ever-changing, it is as fast reactive as consumers are, then the food industry is the place to be. You will work with some, as Helen said at the beginning, some absolutely amazing people that will blow your mind. So please come on in. It'll be worth it.
Beautifully done. I like that. Okay, Helen, sell yourself to the sixth formers.
Well, I would pose them the problems that the food industry is facing today around health and nutrition and obesity and thinking about sustainability and environment, because those are the sorts of things that children of that age are interested in. They want, you know, we hear all the time that young people want to go into companies that are socially responsible. And those individuals, yes, the companies have a responsibility to do that, but those individuals also have a responsibility to bang the drum when they go into industry and make their industry realise how important those things are. So I would set them the problem, sort of, okay, tell me what you would like to solve about the food industry in terms of supporting addressing the obesity crisis and addressing the sustainability and the environmental complexity of transporting food all around the world. A lot of it's in plastic. Tell me how you want to solve that problem, because that's what we're doing all the time. We're solving problems. So I'd get them to just think about that for themselves, really, because I think once they started, you know, asking questions back, starting thinking about what possibly the solutions are and starting to understand it, I think they would get quite excited.
I think you're right. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us. And I look forward to finding out how this evolves, because obviously it's a vital area. Now, you've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast from Food Matters with Helen McNair and Jacinta George and me, Stephen Gates. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from salmon farm sustainability to veg picking robots. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.